Who knows more about Munster rugby, me or you, Quinny?
Everyone has an opinion, don't they? Some of the opinions are waffle, but I'd like to think I know a lot.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the Rugby Channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
I'm delighted to say Mark Lawrenson is with us this morning. Mark, good morning to you. You must be a bit wrecked. You were actually at the game last night, but you're already back in Liverpool.
I'm wrecked. Not a bit wrecked. Total wrecked. I ain't got to bed about 3:45 this morning, so... But I got back straight after the game, which was fabulous. I got a lift, in inverted commas, from... it's like some of the officials of the club, etc., and the under-19s who obviously had played Atletico Madrid in the afternoon. So it was all good. Me and Jason McAtee, a couple of glasses of wine on the way back. Happy days.
Nice. And I was going to ask, what is the atmosphere on a plane like that, an official club plane on the way back after one of those massive European nights that seesaws ferociously and ends up in your favour?
Yeah, very, very good. Everybody was very pleased with themselves, although obviously we didn't do anything to help the team win. But no, it was all good. Yeah.
In the pantheon of great nights, where you're absolutely spanking a team and then you stupidly let them back into it and then you still win it at the end away from home, it's right up there, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, totally is right up there. And in fact, I mean, I don't know if you've been to Atletico's ground, where you probably haven't had the opportunity, have you? And I think it holds about 50,000 to 60,000. And Atletico Madrid supporters are absolutely manic. They make an unbelievable noise. And Simeone, the manager, kind of conducts the crowd from the manager's position, from the trainer's position, and everything. And I mean, every single tackle, it's like, you know, send him off this and all. It's really, really, really good. I mean, For Liverpool to come on top and get a win was obviously massive, because, as you said, it was... I mean, the first half was a game of two halves, you know, and obviously Liverpool started really, really well. Although it has to be said that Atletico were missing two of their back three, two very important players, and that's why they looked a little bit kind of shabby to start with. And obviously then they got themselves back in the game, and Liverpool themselves also started defensively to look a little bit shabby as well.
When you analysed the game last night, Mark, I mean, Jer kind of pointed to it there, letting Atletico back into the game. Is that exactly what happened from Liverpool's perspective, or do Atletico deserve huge credit?
No, I think Atletico deserve lots of credit. And I think what basically, you know, Atletico are a very physical team. You know, they love the challenges, they love the tackles, but they just sat off Liverpool. I mean, Simeone was doing his absolute nut on the sidelines. And then, at 2-0 down, one of his players made a great tackle, and that seemed to kind of raise everybody together. And then they got a goal, and getting that goal just after that tackle, as strange as it seems that a tackle can make all that difference, but it really seriously did. And getting the goal, and all of a sudden, I mean, they could have gone in at half-time. They could have been 4-2 up. Liverpool had a real problem because Naby Keita played really, really narrow. He was on the right of the three in midfield, and Carrasco, who started sort of left wing back for Atletico Madrid, and Lamar used to play at Monaco. They basically just attacked Trent Alexander-Arnold, and he didn't have any help whatsoever. And then Matic was getting dragged over, and they really posed Liverpool many, many problems. And it took a while for Liverpool actually to sort those problems out. I mean, they got it back to 2-2 when Griezmann got through. And we all thought he was offside because he was that far in front of everybody. And he should have scored. I mean, Alisson made a great block. But it was just one of those games. You go in at half-time and everyone goes, wow. And then the second half was just as good. Griezmann got sent off. And, first look in real time, he looked a little bit unfortunate. I don't really think that he saw Firmino. He just kind of put his foot up. But because it was high and he caught Firmino, the referee just sent him off. Then they went apoplectic, the supporters. Simeone was going nuts. And it was honestly, it was like the Colosseum for 15 minutes, or what I would propose the Colosseum was probably like, apart from the fact nobody got eaten. But it was just brilliant. It really, seriously, it was just like rock and roll. It was just such a fabulous game. It's a long time since I've been to such a game that's got so many talking points.
It lived up to all the hype, the pre-match, because so many of these games end up being kind of drab nil-alls. Not anymore, really, and not with this Liverpool team. Can I just ask you about Keita's role and positioning? Obviously, he gets whipped off at half-time. Was he doing what he was supposed to do? Was it that Klopp misunderestimated what the consequences of playing him in that was going to be?
I think so. For once, I think Jürgen got it wrong. Just got it wrong a little bit. You know, he wanted to play Nara because, if you looked at Atletico, they sort of played with five at the back and three in midfield. But the two wing backs almost made it five in midfield at times. And I think Liverpool just underestimated how attacking they would be. If you remember when Atletico knocked them out, I mean, they didn't cross the halfway line for probably 75, 80 minutes. And all of a sudden, two goals late on and they beat Liverpool and knocked them out of the competition. And I think there was a little bit of that with Liverpool last night. But I think the problem, well, Keita won't play at the weekend because Fabinho will play. And we were all surprised when we saw the team sheet that Fabinho wasn't playing because, you know, in that kind of battle that was last night, he's far more important to Liverpool. He'll get a foot in, he can pass it, he's very, very mobile. And I think Klopp basically, by pulling your man off at half-time, was admitting that we probably got that wrong a little bit. But listen, that's what, you know, that's where you're a manager and you sit there, stand there and you look at it and you change it. And the change worked for them, most definitely.
Do you play Keita in a big game in the future if you've got Henderson and Fabinho on the pitch with him?
No, I don't think I will.
Right.
You know, he's been there a long, long time now, Naby Keita, and you know, we saw his previous club. He looked a real, real player. Great eye for a pass. Get your goal as well. He just doesn't look the same. It just looks like he's never really come to terms with the ferocity, be it the Champions League or be it the Premier League. And many, many times, you know, you've looked at him and you kind of think, well, what actually did he do? Which is unfortunate because he's got undoubted ability. And I'm told in training he looks, you know, world class, but training's training and playing's playing.
So what is your sort of order of midfielders then at that point? So assuming Fabinho and Henderson obviously start, I'm guessing Curtis Jones is number one, but what's the rest of the order there for that third midfielder spot in your view?
Well, Henderson will always be in there, won't he? And you know they throw Milner in really tight games because of what he does and his workload. But I mean, you know, the three in midfield would be, with what's available, would be Henderson, Curtis Jones for me and Fabinho. And I tell you what, last night showed to a lot of us was that how much they miss Wijnaldum, who's peeved obviously at PSG, but he's gone for the dough and he's not going to come back, so such is life.
But who would be your Jones is obviously injured at the moment, who's your next man up after Jones then in that midfield three?
Well, I mean, the list is there's quite a few, Oxlade-Chamberlain, etc. But there's nobody really that kind of stands out that you go, get him in the team. But, right. You know, I think the thing with them is somebody was saying last night, I mean, the number of times they've scored three goals away from home already this season is phenomenal. So, you know, and they've won games far easier. It was just, I think it was a little bit of a reminder that, you know, at that level, you know, the real, real top teams, which undoubtedly I think Atletico Madrid are, and they probably, I would thought, go on and win La Liga. You've got to be on your toes. And sometimes, you know, you don't have the ball for a while. And I think that was a little bit strange for Liverpool yesterday, where they didn't have the ball for long periods and they just had to sit in and basically try and be solid. But they weren't, unfortunately, for half of the first half, certainly.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if the individual mistakes that Keita made is something that gets replicated across the season, or if that's automatically fixed when he's not in the team. I just do want to take a second to pay some tribute to James Milner here, who's 36 next January. He's getting picked for the away game against Atletico Madrid in the Champions League, and he's getting picked in midfield at this stage of his career. It's absolutely remarkable stuff.
Yeah, well, apparently his figures in training and everything, his stats, I should say, are sensational, the boys say. But he's, when you look at him, and I'm not being disrespectful here at all, he's a good, steady, solid player. He doesn't do anything particularly outstanding. You know, you watch him play and he's probably 6 or 7 out of 10, but he plays in all different positions. He's got unbelievable experience. He's very much a calming influence. And I mean, now looking forward to kind of Sunday and Old Trafford, will Milner start? Because, you know, that was a tough game last night. And as you say, he's 36. But, oh, yeah, he's a pro's pro. And everybody loves him at that football club. They can't speak highly enough about him in every single way, on and off the pitch.
And everything you just said there about James Milner is probably adjectives that have been absent when Manchester United fans describe their midfield, if we're looking ahead to Sunday here.
Long may that continue.
He made his debut for Leeds in 2002. Next year will be, if he makes it to November 2022, it'll be 20 years playing in the top flight. In
sensational.
It is. And even when he's playing right back and there are smart, quick, fast players up against him, he still seems to be able to survive. So I don't know. I just think that.
Unless it's Phil Foden.
Well, it turns out nobody can do that, though. It turns out nobody can survive that.
No, not at the moment.
The recovery from last season is something else that we talked about a little bit earlier on the show. Was it just down to the fact that the central defenders were absent and that had a knock-on impact on midfield? Now that everybody's back, is it just as simple as that? Because the level they're at the moment is as good as anything they've been at under Klopp.
Absolutely, and the quality of the football and the quality of the goals, you know, are also outstanding. I mean, if you remember, they stuck Fabinho at the back, didn't they? And obviously, taking him out of midfield was a big thing. And I mean, towards the end of that, they just, anybody turned up fit, and they were playing in the back four, weren't they? So yeah, it is as simple as that. But also, and I think we all know this, is that football is so different with a crowd. And I think the likes of Atletico Madrid, Liverpool, you go Man United as well, you know, massive effect on the opposition playing at those grounds against those teams. And the noise last night from Atletico supporters honestly was sensational. It was a bit like being at Liverpool. It was like a European night where you felt like you're at Liverpool, but you're actually at Atletico Madrid. So it was just such a top game. And the thing I really, really loved was when the final whistle went and Simeone just cleared off, didn't he? He was never, ever, ever going to put his arms around Jurgen Klopp and say, well played, Jurgen. He just gave him the old see you later and I'll see you in a few weeks.
I know we're all supposed to be disgusted about the lack of sportsmanship, but actually, you know what? A little bit of drama. This adds to the soap opera. Bring it on.
Nothing wrong with it. It's like, you know, Klopp kind of looked and sort of, I don't know whether he waved or whatever, but it was obviously thinking, F you, by the way. So now I love all that. It's passionate. It's fabulous, isn't it? And listen, generally after games, they all kind of, all these guys sort of get together and have a drink. I don't know in Europe whether that happens, but a majority of Premier League clubs will invite the opposition in for a beer after the match because that's the way that it works. Although, I text Moisey when they won at Everton at the weekend because it's obviously a massive win for him. And he went in it and he said, Rafa never invited me in for a drink. So that's because you nicked 3 points from him and they'd have the real hump.
God, he really did. Well, like, certainly his team certainly outclassed Everton on the day, didn't they? I mean, it was another Moisey masterclass.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, look, you know, I've told you boys before, he loves the players. He said they're absolutely fabulous and they work extremely hard. He says he could do with two or three more, but everybody obviously says that all the time. So he's had a massive influence on that football club. And it just shows you when you now look at Man United, if they've been able to stick with him, but there are obviously other factors that were a problem at Manchester United as well, losing three of the back four in the first 3 or 4 months. But, you know, if he'd actually given them as much time as Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had, who's to say where they would be at the moment?
Well, certainly there's a track record that you can establish between these two, and Moyes' recovery has been sensational. You bring up Man United there. It's an unbelievably difficult period that they're facing into, and they've got Atlanta tonight, obviously, at home. It hasn't been... Hasn't been a brilliant sequence of results to get to this point, so you're not immediately chalking in a win there. From Liverpool's perspective, ahead of the game at the weekend, you have to go out trying to kill them at this stage, right? Because it could set off a chain of chaos there that would knock off a rival for the title this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, Liverpool can only play going forward. You know, that's the thing about them, and if you get the supply right to the front three, the regular front three. you know, they'll score. I mean, everybody knows Salah's been unbelievable so far this season. But the other two as well have really, I mean, Firmino started to look like the player that we knew he always was and has been. And Mane as well started to score with all his hard work. And they've got Jota. So, you know, why wouldn't you play that way? And it's just the interesting thing with Manchester United, because we're all sat on the outside looking in. But you look at Liverpool and you know how they play. And you could honestly, you know, in games sometimes you could close your eyes and you know where every player will be generally, because that's, you know, the pattern of how it all works, and it doesn't work any other way. But you look at Manchester United and you kind of think that there's no fluency. Who's actually supposed to be playing where? And as good a start as Ronaldo's made, he doesn't do any closing down. And, you know, it's all very well saying, I'll get the ball into the box to him and he'll score. But apparently he's, and I don't really do stats, but someone was telling me last night that he's the least pressure person in terms of pressurising the opposition in the Premier League. And he's 50% lower than the next guy above him, who I don't know even was. So you're then saying, well, right, well, we're only pressing with, well, nine, aren't they? Nine outfield players and one or two of them. And, you know, if you look at one or two of them, they don't really want to press. They just want to play when the ball comes to them. And it can be outstanding players, but there just doesn't seem a set pattern and kind of even a rigidity of Manchester United with and without the ball. It's like, well, a little bit off the cuff. But, you know, that was best Charlton and Law's day and obviously Fergie's lot. But that they're not anything like near those kind of teams at the moment.
If you're Cristiano Ronaldo on Sunday and your team is in possession of the ball, are you targeting Virgil van Dijk? Are you trying to tap into this idea that he's not back to his best?
Yeah, well, he will be. But, I mean, you know, and his movement's still good in the box, but it's getting the ball in there. And I think that Liverpool's plan against him basically will be to play as high up the field as possible. And maybe minimise the fact that, you know, in the box he comes alive. He's obviously, you know, great finisher. He's very, very strong in the air as well. So I think that would generally be the Liverpool plan. And just search for weaknesses elsewhere. Why he picked the team, certainly, Ollie, at Leicester was strange. Because his top centre-back, well, he didn't even look like he'd trained.
No.
You know, and he's a big unit, and he looks to me like one of those who needs to train and train really hard every day. And I think he just thought, I'll throw him in, he'll be absolutely fine. Well, he got absolutely torn apart. It was just, I mean, the second half, and I'm not being anti-Manchester United, but they were abysmal. And every time Leicester came forward, they looked like they were going to score.
So, just last one for me. Your mindset when you were playing up against a title rival in a game like this coming this weekend, it has to be very aggressive, right? It is the Klopp style, and you've talked about that. How does he make sure that they don't in any way take this for granted or miss the opportunity to really show?
Yeah, he doesn't let them. He's on them all the time. I'm sure today. I'm not sure what time they travel back, but I'm sure he's had a little bit of a meeting, or he will have a little bit of a meeting, which will be good bits and bad bits. But he will just remind them what's expected of them with and without the ball. And, you know, I mean, as we know, they press really, really well. They work extremely hard. The forwards have to buy into it. It's part of it. And if you don't, you know, you're off. So I think he will obviously be absolutely delighted with the win, but I don't think he'll be telling them that. He'll just be saying, look, boys, you know, we're 2-0 up and we keep it 2-0 up to half time, and then they've got to start to take chances. And when I say chances, in terms of getting more and more men forward, and that's when you really do pick them off, especially if your front three are really clever and quick, which they are. So he'll be looking more for the first 20 minutes last night rather than the last 70